You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
The vigil was brought upon the solidarity of different groups coming together to mourn and also emphasize important points and important issues that has been happening a long time. The vigil is a combination of speeches from different activists from mainly the Muslim community, but also the Tangata Fenua. And we began the introduction to the vigil / remembrance by doing a karanga and karakia. And we also had the imam of the South Auckland Mosque opening a prayer and then closing with a prayer, and at the end there was an azan because it was time for prayer. It was basically Isha time when the event finally closed, so there was an azan.
And that's quite a, there were very sort of important rituals and spiritual rituals involved there, and having a link too between Tangata Whenua and the migrant community that you were hoping to represent. How important was that link?
It's very important because, first of all, I want to emphasize the importance of us being migrants. Many Muslims are migrants, except if you're Tangata Whenua, but most Muslims come from nations that are not Aotearoa. So to bring the Tangata Whenua into the picture and let them be in solidarity with us was very powerful. And they have been through what we have been through, like mosques here get desecrated, like the marae get burned. So there's a powerful link between that, and also in terms of spiritual significance, I might add that my suggestion for the event to take place on Friday is basically not only remembering the victims, but the name itself, Juma Remembrance, is after the Friday prayer. It's like a holy day. It's kind of like Christians have their Sunday, some people have Saturday, the Sabbath. We have Juma prayer, so there was a point to it. It was like a connection and relating to the azan and, you know, the opening prayer or the dua, it binds it all together. And getting the Tangata Whenua involved was also significant because the domain was historically an important place in Maori history and culture.
And all of those decisions are very deliberately made. They've all been very thought through. The whole event, the entire process, has meaning to it. Now, I guess I want to move into some of those negative responses that people have had since Friday, particularly, I think, because the issue that Marx, at least, has responded to is the idea that this wasn't what people were expecting, or that was what some people have said. This isn't how they thought they would be mourning that night. They didn't expect that. They didn't expect for it to be so political. Do you want to respond to that?
First of all, to those who were saying that this is political, I want to bring up the point that there was a vigil actually a week before ours. And guess what? Candidates of political party came into the equation and talked. That was politics. And also I want to point out that the massacre itself was a political cause. The white supremacist in the manifesto was talking about very political things. And I find it very concerning how people are trying to silence the voices of Muslims and other people who are bringing up the issues that are important. Because if you really think about it, the whole issue why this massacre took place in the first place, it was the buildup of an escalation. And I was one of the speakers who spoke during the event. And then I said, it is not an exception. It's an escalation of white supremacy, terrorist activities that have been brewing up already. And one thing to note, if it was too political, where is the suitable place to voice our concerns? And also, when, like 1 week later, 2 weeks later, month later, year later? And I also want to bring up the thing about the whole, the policing of like our emotions. And most of the speakers, not all, but most of the speakers were Muslim. And most of the Muslim speakers knew about the events leading up to this event. I'm not saying we know that this was going to happen, but we already felt this unease of like racism and xenophobia, Islamophobia increasing. We knew something like this would happen, but we didn't expect it, but we weren't surprised. And to dismiss those fears is invalidating our concerns, which have proved true. And like if New Zealanders, Pakeha, do not want to listen to our concerns, when will it ever change?
I want to come back to the policing of emotion even, yeah. but I will just start, because you talked about that sort of removal of politics, or the supposed, you know, if the supposed attitude that this shouldn't be political, when the entire thing is political. It has been political since before it started. The very existence of Muslim people has been politicized because of Islamophobia. And to not acknowledge that, or to not speak to that experience, or to have people dismiss that, like you've just said, it's absolutely delegitimizing your own experience. So in terms of people, or certain people that believe that this should be an apolitical thing, do you think that it's because those people do not necessarily and are not forced to be political because their everyday existence is not at threat? For somebody to say, let's not be political for a moment, what privilege do they have to say that?
If it's coming from a Pakeha or a non-Muslim, it comes from a very ignorant place, because the news has, across the world, has made Muslims apologize for atrocities done in the name of Islam by Islamic terrorists. And like when we want to explain the situation, we get shut down. Like anything that has to do with racism, xenophobia, Islamophobia, like gets shut down. But when it's a problem in our camp, it's been blown out of proportion, and that is kind of like the hypocrisy that is coming out.
And so again, this idea that those people who are not at all affected by this have any right to say to you how you should be behaving or how you should be mourning at this time, what do you say to them?
I say to them that you're coming from an ignorant point of view and a very entitled point of view, because I have gotten and saw comments like a person saying, oh, I feel, you know, ashamed to be white. But we were addressing white supremacy, and is your point actually valid? And not to invalidate the person, I'm just saying, is it like even relevant to like the situation? Are you derailing the situation at here? And I wanted to point out that after the Christchurch mosque shooting in the UK, hate crimes have gone up by 593%. And following the shooting, two Muslim girls were verbally assaulted on a train station in Mount Albert. And there have been an increase of racist, xenophobic, and Islamic incidents. And to those people who are complaining, it's not only after the event. It was happening years before.
Just also to touch on another thing in the letter here, that you acknowledge what that grieving looks like may be different to yours, and how other cultures grieve and honour the dead may not be something all Pākehā will understand. Do you want to speak to those different cultural traditions, different ways of being, different sort of ways of acknowledging the dead, all of those things? You know, why is it that Pākehā are still thinking that there is one way or one certain way?
I think it comes down to entitlement, and also it also comes down to the fact that many Pākehā kind of live in a Disney version of reality where their privilege and their ignorance have clouded their viewpoints. And you know, New Zealand Aotearoa is not a one culture, not one ethnic society. It's made of different ethnic groups, different cultures, and different cultures have different traditions. For example, in Islam, like mourning can vary from 3 days to 7 days to like even a month, depending on the school or the culture where they're from, because people don't realize that different people have different means of mourning. And like the remembrance is not only grieving in a way that is acceptable for Pākehā sensibility, it is an organization. It is most importantly, it is political, because when we have things like this happen, when should we discuss politics? And it has been made political since the get-go. So that's the whole thing. And like, just to include, like, some Muslims may have, you know, been uncomfortable about the whole situation about confronting white supremacy, I just want to say two things. They may be afraid of the backlash that will happen, so that's why they're trying to side with the Pākehā, because Pākehā is the dominant society here in Aotearoa. Like New Zealand, they have control over the narrative, so they're siding with it. Or they basically want to be in the Pākehā side, and those are the two views I have.
I had I saw this last week. Don't know if you came across it. By Lamia Imam.
Yeah.
She's writing in Texas. And I just thought this point that she said, "We do not take threats by white supremacists seriously because we believe they have a legitimate point of view that should be protected under free speech principles. We fail to recognize that these views sit on a spectrum, and mild forms of racism legitimizes violent racist actions like this." To people who don't understand that very small actions like, or not small in this case, but a very powerful statement by people walking out of a vigil because they think it's too political, and therefore walking out of and delegitimizing those voices. How does that link to the actions that happened in Christchurch?
It shows you the complacency and privilege and the ignorance that many Pākehā who are not awoken to what's going on across the globe, they still feel that they are living in a very beautiful country where there are no issues at all. And when they get confronted by these issues, you know, this was a platform not only for grieving, it was a platform for the voices for our community and other community to be heard, because it's a change. We want change. We want, you know, this was a way to put our foot in the door and say, hey, you know, we need real change. We've been talking about this issue for years. And it's also about preventing future attacks from coming, because if Pakeha want to bury their head in the sand, want to remain in the dark forever and not acknowledge, you know, and non-Muslims not want to acknowledge like Islamophobia happening here, there will be more attacks. It's, you know, it's already too late. It's about preventing an issue from happening before it escalates.
Is there anything that you wanted to add?
In Auckland Uni, in the campus, since last year, there have been rise of white supremacist ideology here within the campus, and I didn't really hear those people speak up against it. And also, last week, white supremacist symbology started popping up in the campus, and that's what I wanted to bring up, because when issues like this happen, they dismiss it as small, but it's not small. You want to talk about Islamic terrorism, but you don't want to talk about white supremacy. That is not honesty, you know. It's denial. And I can see the two aspects of the denial: the insidious evil denial, or kind of like living in a wonderland that you need to wake up from it. And that's what I have to say. And also, this is not us rhetoric really links into the deluded thinking that New Zealand is a very safe place. And going back to the earlier questions that you have asked regarding Pakeha saying and non-Muslim saying this is inappropriate, the basic policing of, you know, legitimate issues. We are trying to de-escalate, we're trying to prevent something like this from ever happening again.
And it's in doing that, you have to name things, right? You have to speak to these experiences. And if people are uncomfortable hearing it, that's saying more about them than it is you, right?
Exactly.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.